Would you turn with me to 1 Peter chapter 3 as we continue our study through the book of 1 Peter? And today we're looking at verses 1 to 6, and I'm not going to teach those verses in detail. There's a lot of great stuff in them. But we really just want to ask that question, what does beauty look like? If you would like to be a woman of inner beauty, and as a husband, as you would like to be able to support your wife in that, if you want to encourage that in your daughters and the ladies around you, what does that actually look like? I guess as we think about the influence of our culture, we're bombarded with images day after day. It doesn't matter where you go, whether you're watching TV, listening to the radio, even you're hearing images of beauty described to you. When you're looking at the internet, when you're walking down in a shopping centre, you're seeing images of what beauty looks like that have nothing to do with what the Bible describes as being truly beautiful. But yet we see glimpses of it, don't we, in stories like Ian and Larissa's. And it says in the beginning of, in verse 10 of Proverbs 31, a wife of noble character, a wife of inner beauty, who can find? Well, Ian did. And you know what? I have too. And as I look around, there are many of those women right here. And their stories might be different to Ian and Larissa's. And I look at my own marriage and my limitations perhaps aren't as obvious as what Ian's limitations are. But I am not a perfect man. And yet my wife also supports me amongst my failings and my weaknesses. And many of you here can say the same thing, and you recognise those wonderful qualities we saw so clearly in Larissa. They're evident in our marriages as well, and they're evident in our wives. A wife of noble character, who can find? Well, the Bible tells us how to develop those qualities. It tells us what to aim for when we aspire to be people of inner beauty. Has anyone ever seen the movie Shallow Hal? I wouldn't recommend it necessarily, but the basic idea of the movie is here's a guy who just has this very shallow external idea of what beauty is all about, and that's what he chases after. But he gets hypnotised, I think is the way that it rolls out, and so all of a sudden he starts seeing inner beauty externally. And so as the movie progresses, you see, I guess, the real life view of people that he encounters, and then you see them through Hal's eyes, and it's dramatically different. People who look perhaps not that externally attractive according to the measures of our society all of a sudden are irresistible to Hal. Or they're strapping young men when it comes to the case of blokes he's looking at, or they're gorgeous ladies, and he's just so attracted to them. But if he were looking only externally, according to the ways that he used to, he would have found them completely uninteresting. But because somehow something had been flicked and he was able to see the inner beauty, all of a sudden they were compelling. And I reckon there's a lot of blokes who could use a touch of that, where all of a sudden, instead of being focused on what our society tells us to look at, we start seeing and we start valuing real beauty, true beauty, inner beauty. And that's what the Bible wants to encourage us to do. And that's what we read about in 1 Peter 3, verses 1 to 6. It begins there, wives in the same way. You remember what we talked about for husbands last week? Peter was saying to husbands, and we skipped ahead last week and we looked at verse 7. He said, just as he had said to slaves in the context of masters and citizens in the context of society, he said, there is an obligation, a responsibility you have to submit yourself to Christ and to live the sort of life that Christ as your Lord commands you to live. And in doing so, you will face external pressures that try to get you to live a certain way. You will face pressures that want you to conform to the pattern of this world. And it can become very frightening, very threatening to you to live differently to that. But not only will there be those external pressures, you'll have your inner desires. And some of our inner desires are fine and some of them are sinful. And those sinful desires are going to want to pull you away. You're going to want to find excuses to do other than what Jesus commands. And so, citizens in a country, you need to learn to submit to Christ and obey the laws of your land. Slaves in a household where there is a master, you need to submit to Christ and work diligently, not only when the master's eye is on you, but when it's not. And he talks about husbands and how they ought to treat their wives, even when they had the power to do basically whatever they wanted. No, remember that your master's eye is on you. Treat your wife with consideration and respect as a co-heir with you in the gracious gift of life. And Peter is saying this same sort of thing to ladies here. In the same way, as you submit to Christ, as you honour him as Lord of your life, as you recognise that there are pressures around you that would want to coerce you, want to force you into a different mould of living, and as you recognise even that there are desires within you that make you want to do something else, Submit yourself to Christ as Lord and do what he commands you to do. Well, what does he command to do? Almost don't want to read the next sentence. Wives, in the same way, be submissive to your husbands. Now, we know, as we looked at last week, every single believer needs to have a humble and submissive attitude toward all people. We're meant to sacrifice our own interests for the sake of others. Philippians 2 reminded us of that. However, there's a difference between that self-discipline to say, no, despite what I want to do, I'm actually going to choose to look to the interests of others. There's a difference between that which is meant to be exercised in all relationships and what Peter is commanding of wives in his generation, in his era, in this passage. He's telling them, I want you to place yourself under the authority of your husband, which is a unique calling of wives in the marriage relationship that is not asked of husbands. I want to remind you of the human story where as soon as sin entered the world, do you remember what happened to the husband and wife relationship? Instead of being one of complementation, one where you're working together, supporting one another, honouring one another, that became a marriage of tension. The marriage relationship was cursed. There's competition in relationships. There's struggle for control. There's competitions over whose needs and whose desires are going to be satisfied. And for most of human history, men have held the upper hand. All right, and let's not gloss over that. The fact is that the struggle has been heavily weighted toward men, which is why in verse 7 Peter talked about women as the weaker partners. For much of human history, women have been exploited and abused. They've been vulnerable. And sadly, there are even people who would use the teaching of the Bible as a means to dominate women, to treat them with less than the dignity that they deserve as co-heirs with men in the gracious gift of life. And I've seen far too many men fail to put verse 7 into practice, as we talked about last week, and offer that respectful and considerate leadership in their home, yet they still expect to be treated as the spiritual authority in their home. And such men need to be reminded of the log and spec principle. Do you remember that one? Guys, whenever you're tempted to have an attitude which says, my wife ought to submit, that's the spec. How about you first look at the log and say, okay, but how was I supposed to lead? Let's ask that question first. And the answer is respectfully, considerately, with an attitude of self-giving and self-sacrifice. And I've discovered that whenever men lead that way, all of a sudden the tension in relationships for who's in charge, it just dissipates. Guys, have you ever experienced that? I've seen a number of interviews and I've read a number of comments from Christian husbands, godly men who have been respected for their leadership, and this issue has come up, and in a society which says submission, that's so first century. Oh, that's so even before the first century. We don't do that anymore. And yet these men have taught submission, and so they've been asked the question, but how does that really work for you in a society which says that that just doesn't work? And the response has generally been something like this. You know, in all the years of our marriage, whenever I have loved my wife as Christ loves the church, my wife has never struggled with the issue of submission. Never. So men, the log and the spec principle applies. When you're thinking about a passage like this, which says, wives, submit to your husbands, you need to read that as a husband, not as a wife. It's your wife's responsibility to hear what God is challenging her. Your responsibility is to read on to verse 7 and says, well, how should I lead? And so we need to keep that focus in mind and not fall into the trap which has been perpetrated upon women so often in our history, where men have pounded the pulpit or pounded the table at home and says, submit! That was never the intention of this passage, and we need to be very clear about that. But nevertheless, women of Peter's day are commanded here in Scripture to place themselves under the authority of their husbands. Now, is Peter saying that you should let your husband do whatever he wants in the context of his leadership? No, he's not saying that at all. In fact, that makes perfect sense to us. Who works for an employer or is under the authority of somebody in either a workplace situation or maybe it's a sporting club or some sort of association? We all know what it's like to be under authority. Now, if I work for an employer, does that mean that he has the right to tell me to break the law? Does that mean he has the right to tell me to act contrary to my faith or to my moral code? Does that mean he has the right to treat me as less than a person of dignity and worth as created in the image of God? Of course it doesn't. They have authority over me in the workplace, but that doesn't mean they get to do whatever they may like toward me. And we need to keep that in mind when we're talking about marriage as well. When we're talking about authority in the marriage, we're not talking about a license to be abusive, selfish, and all those kinds of things, which husbands can be if they don't honour God and if they don't choose to do what is right. It's not giving permission for that. And we need to be very careful that we acknowledge that. It is giving permission for husbands to exercise godly leadership, and it's giving the wives the obligation, the command, to be submissive in their attitude toward that kind of leadership. That's why verse 7 follows straight after, because Peter knows as soon as men read this whole wife submit to your husband thing, there's going to be that selfish spark which wells up and goes, awesome, I get to have my way. And Peter's first response is, now men, don't try to get your own way. Be submissive, be considerate, be respectful as you lead in your home. I hope that makes sense to you. In our culture, it's such a foreign kind of idea, but it made perfect sense to the people in Peter's day, and it makes perfect sense to us as long as we have the right understanding of what godly leadership is and what godly submission is. Sometimes we forget that with authority comes responsibility. Okay, when God gives authority to husbands, he gives it with that responsibility to use that authority well. But nevertheless, we talked about husbands last week, so we're not going to repeat that dose. Why does God command submission here in this passage? Why is it that in God's view, submission is something that makes a woman beautiful? It expresses her and gives her an opportunity to express inner beauty. Well, there are two reasons that are given in our text. I'm going to deal with them very briefly. The first one is simply to win over husbands that do not yet believe in Jesus. The verse continues, if you read from 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 1. Wives, in the same way, submit to yourselves to your own husbands, so that if any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without words by the behaviour of their wives, when they see the purity and reverence of your lives. Now again, what's it not saying? It's not saying that you should not even dare speak the truth to your husband, that you shouldn't try to influence him, that you shouldn't exert some sort of influence which leads him toward Christ. In fact, we remember in Proverbs 31 that the wife of noble character, this wife of inner beauty, speaks with wisdom and faithful instruction. This is a person of character and dignity and strength who is able to speak and exert influence. Peter's not saying that you should hold back on that by any means. What is he saying? Don't try force your husband into the fold. Don't try force your husband into the faith. Don't be on his case constantly using repetitive words. Come on, come with us to this. Oh, this functions. Oh, come on, why won't you come? Please come. You know, no, don't use your words to try and force him to do something he doesn't want to do. Because what is that going to do? It's just going to harden his heart. It's going to make him stubborn. He's going to set himself and say, no, I'm not giving in. I don't want anything to do with this. Rather, having used your words to show what you care about, to express your faith, to try and convince and persuade as appropriate, then allow your actions to back that up. You don't need to keep on speaking after enough has been said. Reinforce it through the godliness of your life. You think about those wonderful characteristics of the Proverbs 31 woman. What man isn't going to be impressed by that? What man isn't going to wonder, how is she able to live this way? Well, we know it's only because Christ is the one who sustains. I love the quote from John Piper in that clip. The beauty of covenant-keeping love shines brightest when only Christ can sustain it. When you live a godly life which has no human explanation, it causes people to think, what is it that's sustaining this attitude? What is it that's sustaining this lifestyle? And the answer, of course, is God alone. So Peter wants to say to Christian wives, don't give up. Don't underestimate the power your life can have as a testimony to Jesus. Don't be afraid to speak about your faith, but don't feel like you've got to keep going on and on. Allow your life to shine brightly. Don't give in to fear. As you stay close to Jesus, as you're transformed in character, your husband will see more and more of Jesus, and it may just win him over. And guess what? That is also fantastic advice for husbands who have unbelieving wives. And it's fantastic advice for parents who have unbelieving children, and for children who have unbelieving parents, and for those of us who have unbelieving friends. Use your words. Don't be afraid to testify about Jesus. Be prepared to give an answer for the hope that you have, as Peter will go on to say. But don't try to bully and go on and on and on and on at people. Let your life shine out. Let that be your testimony, so it reinforces everything you've said. And who knows, by the grace and power of God in time, it may well win them over. And that's a great encouragement for all of us who are connected with people that we love who have not yet entered into God's kingdom. Now, Satan would love for us to be distracted by other things, to focus on a competition for who's in charge, to focus on our own rights and interests, to rail against things that aren't fair in life, to be distracted by the things we want to pursue for ourselves. But what does Peter say here? Hey, let's put all that aside. Let's focus on our testimony. Let's focus on the eternal prize of how we want to impact on those we love. The salvation of those who do not yet believe is the first reason that God commands submission of these wives. Remember, in their culture, that was something that was expected. And so Peter says to them, look, don't battle against this, but just love. Just give up your own rights, your own interests for the sake of love. Just like everyone else is commanded to do, this is what it looks like for you. Just do that for the sake of the eternal prize. The second reason he gives is to allow the inner beauty of godly wives to shine through. Let's read from verse 3. Your beauty should not come from outward adornment, such as braided hair and the wearing of gold jewelry and fine clothes. Have you ever walked through a shopping centre? How many different fashion shops do we have? I mean, you walk through somewhere like Joondalup or Whitford, and you can't count on your fingers how many fashion shops you'll walk past just in 5 minutes. The marketing of merchandise for getting beauty treatments and fashion accessories and all these things to look at your appearance is just overwhelming. Now, is Peter saying there's anything wrong with looking after yourself? No, of course not. We're having a pamper night here on Friday night, and it's going to be fantastic, and it's going to be enjoyable. What is he saying, though? Don't allow the values of your culture to pull you into thinking that it's all important. Don't spend yourself, don't spend your resources, your time, your thoughts, just thinking about how you make yourself externally beautiful, because really, that fades away. It's of no eternal value. And yes, it's nice to be presentable, and it's nice to enjoy your physical appearance and how you can present for your husband, for your family, for your friends, but don't think that that's what makes you truly beautiful. Keep it in perspective, is what he's saying. He's not saying don't have outward adornment. He's not saying don't braid your hair. He's saying don't think that that's what matters most. What does he go on to say does matter most? Instead, it should be that of your inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight. For this is the way the holy women of the past who put their hope in God used to make themselves beautiful. They were submissive to their own husbands, like Sarah, who obeyed Abraham and called him her master. You're her daughters if you do what is right and do not give way to fear. I don't know if you remember, but Sarah was a striking woman. She was beautiful, so much so that even when Pharaoh noticed her, and Pharaoh, who's got access to all the most beautiful women in the kingdom, he goes, ooh, that's nice, I would like that. She was a very beautiful woman. Nothing wrong with presenting yourself attractively. But what does God commend in terms of her beauty? It's that inner beauty that she demonstrated in her relationship with Abraham. That gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight. But in our society, that sort of thing sounds very, very negative. When you talk about somebody who chooses to submit themselves to another, to place themselves under somebody else's authority, that's somebody with no ambition. That's not an attractive quality in our society. That's somebody who's content to be treated as a doormat, as a servant, as somebody who's inferior by nature. That's the sort of message our society has when it comes to those who would choose to be under the authority of somebody else. Our whole society is geared around trying to be the person in charge. So you strive for the promotion at work and you strive to come out from the authority of others so that you can exercise your authority over others. It's the law of the jungle almost, is the way our society works. And so we read a story like the story of Sarah and we go, I'm not attracted to that at all. That's not beautiful. That's weak. But listen to the sort of woman that the Bible holds up as being beautiful in this way. Going back to Proverbs 31, she's clothed with strength and dignity, and she can laugh at the days to come. She speaks with wisdom, Faithful instruction is on her tongue. She watches over the affairs of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Does this sound like a doormat? Does this sound like an inferior person, a weak person? By no means. I love this next verse from verse 28 of Proverbs 31. Her children rise up and call her blessed. So does her husband, and he praises her. Many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Submission isn't weakness. It's a commitment that comes from a strong personal faith in God to honour a husband as the leader in the home and to diligently, to work hard to help him to live up to that task. And this kind of wife, as Proverbs 31 says, is worth more than rubies. She's hard to find. God gave me a woman like that, and she's out doing creche at the moment, which is probably a relief because she'd be blustering if she was still sitting there. That's Carolyn, of course. Over the years of our marriage, she has encouraged me. She has corrected me. She's rebuked me. She's counselled me. She's affirmed me. She's respected me, and much, much more. Over the years, she has built into me enormously to help me to be the man that God's called me to be and to lead our family in the way that God calls me to do. Not alone, not as a remote authority figure, but as somebody who does it in partnership with a very well-suited and capable helper. And I often tell Carolyn that I think she looks beautiful. And I'm sure, men, you do that with your spouses as well. Oh, you look wonderful. And you affirm that physical appearance. What has occurred to me over the years is I need to remember a lot more often than I do to tell my wife that she is beautiful. Not just that she looks beautiful, but she is beautiful. How much I appreciate all those things that she does, not only for me, but for our children, for those around us. She works hard and diligently as a servant, as somebody who just wants to love and bless, and we are all blessed by that. And so our children should rise up and bless her. And her husband should stand up and praise her because she deserves it. And so do the other ladies in our congregation and the ladies in our life. So men, I want you to lead your families well in that respect. Honour your wives. Affirm those wonderful characteristics they have and do it in front of your children and teach them to do that same thing. We need women who do not give in to fear but who courageously do what is right with beauty and gentleness. But now we come to that question, I guess, which is, well, for the women of Peter's day, submission was a part of the culture. And so he was able to say, well, stay in the way that our culture operates, but do it in a way which shows your godliness. Submission of a wife to a husband really is not part of our culture anymore. Does that still win over unbelieving husbands? Does that still something that a Christian marriage should exhibit? Well, if I was going to tackle all the intricacies of that question, we wouldn't be going home today. But what I want to do is recommend a great resource to you. This is an Australian book written by Claire Smith. She's a lady who's done a lot of biblical study on this topic, and it's very interesting to read of her personal story as she's done that. And I've read this, a number of our other leaders have read this recently, and we've all found it excellent as a resource to unpack what the Bible says about how it should be applied in our culture. So rather than me trying to unpack that and doing a really brief job, I want to encourage you, get that book, God's Good Design. It's at Coorong and Word and so on at the moment. If you want, I can lend you a copy. It's a great read, and that will encourage you and help you to feel confident that as you approach your role, that you're doing it as the Bible teaches and not just conforming to the values of our society or your own desires. But as I would reinforce, the practical comment that I've heard so many times from godly men who I respect is, look, when I look after my job as a leader and do that, I find that the issue of submission doesn't have to be forced anyway. It's just not a problem for us. So we need to keep it in perspective. It's not the thing that is the central thing in our marriages. It's not the thing that we should be fighting about all the time. Who's in charge here anyway? You know, if that's an issue for you, that's a problem. But nevertheless, we still do need to have a biblical understanding of authority, and I'd encourage that as a good resource for you. Okay, what are some ways that we can build our ladies up in being women of inner beauty? Now, I don't know if as you were watching Larissa's story, you thought, could I do that? You know, could I support this man who I love to such a degree that I would give myself and let go of all those hopes and dreams that I had for what married life would be like? Could I do that? Could I put myself in that position? I don't know if you read Proverbs 31 and just feel tired. She does all that. I can't do that. How do we help our ladies to be women of inner beauty whose lives exhibit these kind of qualities, these kinds of characteristics? I think women in our society are under enormous pressure and an enormous burden of expectation. And I think a lot of women would love to have their children and husband rise up and praise her, but sometimes it's hard enough just to get a civil word out of them. How do you develop inner beauty when just making it through the week is enough of a challenge? How do you build up that sense of the Proverbs 31 woman where you can laugh confidently at the days to come? Because right now you're distressed about how you're managing your kids and where things are going in life and in your marriage. There's a number of things we need to say about this. There's just three things I want to really quickly mention as we close. Number one is, we're meant to be giving intergenerational support. We're meant to be a community whereby ladies help each other. Okay, so Titus 2 is the classic chapter. Let me read these words from Titus 2, verse 3 on. Likewise, Paul says to Titus, teach the older women to be reverent in the way they live, not to be slanderers or addicted to much wine, but to teach what is good. And then they can train the younger women to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled and pure, to be busy at home, to be kind and to be subject to their husbands so that no one will malign the word of God. There's an admission here, in a sense, from Paul to say, you know what? It doesn't just happen naturally. We need some apprenticeship models. We need some trainers to come in and say, look, these are some ways that you can do this. And this is how you can approach it in your specific situation. People with life experience and godly maturity who can come alongside and help. I want to challenge the older ladies of our congregation, and I'm not going to define what that is. You can define for yourself what constitutes an older lady and what doesn't. Will you come alongside? Will you be brave enough to offer yourself to some of the younger ladies in our congregation and say, hey, why don't I pop around? Would you like me to come in and just have a cuppa with you, and maybe we can do some of those chores together? And we seem to have developed a culture where you can't do that in the home anymore. If you want to socialise, you've got to go out to a cafe. We don't like to admit that, you know, there is work that needs to be done. Why don't we actually open up and, for the younger women, be humble enough to say, yeah, I'd actually really love it. I would really love for somebody to come in just to spend the time with me, to talk about all kinds of issues, and somebody whose advice I can learn from. You know, as Albert was talking about with plastering, how many different jobs are there that a lady does as part of her normal routines? Thousands. And there are so many skills that you need to develop over that time. The best people to train are those who have been there and done that. That's not to say they're coming in as experts just to instruct. They're coming in to relate, to care and to nurture. And that's a wonderful thing that the church can offer. It takes a bit of bravery because it's countercultural. The culture says, I'm all right, I can do it on my own, I don't need your help, thank you very much. Humility says, you know what, I'd love that and I need it. So I want to encourage us to develop that kind of relationship. Come in, pray together, study God's word, do some practical work together and enjoy the fruit of that. The second thing that we need to do, apart from giving intergenerational support, husbands, you need to do what verse 7 said. Remember, look out for the interests of your wives. Pay attention to how she's going. Does she need more of your time in a particular area? Does she need more resources in a particular area? Are you aware of how her heart is going and what her needs are? Don't expect her to be able to just shoulder the load that she has by herself, just as you should not be expected to shoulder your load by yourself. Be aware, be considerate. Husbands, we need to be awake to that. Our natural tendency is our attention, our focus tends to go work and then what I do for fun. All right, husbands, focus first, wife, family, and go from there. All right, have that consideration. And lastly, wives, and this is what Peter gives us the advice to do in this passage, find your strength in the Lord. Proverbs 31 describes this woman as a woman who has reverence for the Lord. 1 Peter 3 describes her as a woman who hopes in the Lord. It all comes down to your relationship with God. Who's heard of Susanna Wesley? A lot of you may have heard her story. Who's heard of John and Charles Wesley? Okay, they're well-known names. You know, Susanna Wesley had 17 kids, right? So she knows what it's like to be pretty busy at home. But somebody like that, you think they're just going to have their hands full constantly. The appliances were not what we're used to today. But, you know, she used to spend an hour a day in prayer for her children. And she would spend an hour a week with each of her children separately, just encouraging them and teaching them the faith. And if you're familiar with the story of John and Charles Wesley, you'll know how they went on to have amazing ministries and how God used them. And it all comes back to what their mum taught them about how a Christian life is conducted. So, ladies, remember to put your first focus on your own relationship with God, how you're being built up by God yourself, and then passing that out to your family. It's very, very powerful. Sometimes you think, how am I going to do that? Where in the day do I have time to do that? Well, husbands, spend some time with your wives. Make sure that they're able to have that space, because they need it if they're going to be women of noble character. We want our women to be so being conformed to the character of Christ that it shines out of them. And that's the woman of noble character of Proverbs 31, and that's the woman that Peter describes in 1 Peter 3. And that's a woman who is an enormous blessing, not only to her family, but to our whole society.